Hi, this is Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The podcast where we explore the more bizarre ways of getting through your day. This week, we have three stories from Simon Eli Vella from his blog on WordPress, Strained. And here is All Things Being Equal. I woke up in LA feeling like the left side of my head was about to explode. That totally sounds like the start of a scene from The Wolf of Wall Street, but no, drugs and alcohol were not involved, nor was colossal financial fraud. The pain was searing, starting from the base of the skull behind my ear and consuming a large patch that extended to my jaw and eye socket. It was about 6 a.m. Instead of waking up my hypochondriac wife, I thought it would be easier to deal with it alone, so I gingerly put on some clothes and ventured down to the hotel concierge. "I need a doctor, fast, please." She nodded slowly, her contorted face suggesting that I look like something out of Dawn of the Dead. "I'll call one right away, sir." I had no painkillers and no idea what the problem was. We'd had a few drinks the night before, but it hadn't been one of those nights out. You know, one of those nights that you can't remember, but plenty of people are queuing at your front door the next day to remind you that you were walking down the street with your pants around your ankles and half a palm tree hanging out of your ear. No, it hadn't been one of those. A lovely dinner, a couple glasses of wine, but that was it. At first, I thought a ninja must have entered our hotel room during the night, bludgeoned me with a nunchuck, and then quietly left without stealing anything. But the bathroom mirror didn't back up the theory. Although I looked like a bit of a freak with my face twisted in pain, there was no bruising, no blood, no obvious wounds, so I knew that it must have been serious, like a brain tumor. About a half an hour later, the room phone rang, and the concierge advised that the doctor was on his way up. My wife was stirring, and I gently woke her. I told her not to panic, that a doctor was coming up to look at my head. She quickly put some clothes on, looking a bit sleepy, confused. The doctor arrived, Dr. Bob. He was in his late 50s and looked like he'd just come from the golf course. Pleated shorts and a polo top. He gave me his card. I had a quick glance and noticed that his office was in Beverly Hills. Holy shit, I thought. This will cost a fortune. My wife was now fully awake and I could see panic setting in. Dr. Bob looked in my left ear. "Look at me," he then said. He grabbed the lobe of my left ear and yanked it down. I recoiled in agony. "Okay. What you have is an ear infection. Nothing to be worried about. It's something called swimmer's ear." I noticed that my wife's panic had eased. In fact, it seemed that she was now trying to hide a smirk. "It's agonizing," I said, trying to make sure everyone in the room was suitably aware of how serious this actually was. "Oh, yes," said Dr. Bob. "They can be very painful." I looked at my wife. "See? But it's nothing to worry about. I'm going to drop this antibiotic into your ear, and within about half an hour the pain will ease." "We're supposed to be on a long-haul flight tomorrow." "That's fine," he said. "You can fly. Just remember to equalize regularly, especially on the descent." Dr. Bob headed back out to the golf course, leaving me with a prescription and a call-out fee of $500 that I prayed my travel insurance would cover. "Swimmer's ear!" My wife burst out laughing the moment the doctor left. "My little nephew gets that all the time!" So unfair. And my ear has never been the same since. After returning from that trip, the infection came back several times. But fortunately, I always had my ear medicine on hand to avoid the onset of agonizing pain. I am now obsessive about equalizing. I do it on planes, underwater, and at 1 meter above sea level. I do it coming out of the shower, walking to work, reading a book, and on the toilet. I visited my local doctor to insist that there was something seriously wrong with my ear. After all, why were the infections continually coming back? He said there was nothing wrong with it, so I went for a second opinion. The next doctor said the same thing. I told him that when I clean my ears, I find an inordinate amount of wax in the left one. The one thing that doctors don't like to hear is that you're sticking things in your ear, he said. But what about the wax? I asked. There's tons of it in my left ear. It's not normal. Earwax is normal. Just stop cleaning your ears. The wax will come out naturally as the skin in your ear canal grows out. So there was my future, right there. I'm sitting in an important meeting one day at work, and at a critical juncture in negotiations with senior management, a large lump of yellow wax spontaneously drops onto my shoulder. Nothing to worry about, indeed. And here is one fine day. How to share your parking fines with others. Once again, I have fallen afoul of Melbourne's ridiculously overcomplicated car parking regulations. The other night, we returned to our car on Little Collins Street to be greeted by a $78 fine attached to the windscreen. Not only had I checked the signs when we arrived, but I had double-checked them. And as I'd fed the meter, I'd even given a confused French guy advice about the process. You only need to pay for 1 hour, I'd said. A fine landed on his windscreen also. Over the years, the street signs have been continually tweaked and augmented to the point that sometimes you need to study up to 4 separate signs to work out the parking situation. You almost need to hire a project manager to help plot the various start and end times on a formal project schedule, study the dependencies, and then workshop the potential scenarios. Last year, I received a fine after I'd unsuccessfully searched for a sign to tell me that I couldn't park there. Turns out there was one, but not on the traditional metal poles that held every other parking sign in the whole city. No, this one was against a wall about 10 feet from the curb and positioned about 5 meters high. So checking for obvious parking signs is not good enough in this city. Apparently, Melburnians are required to conduct a detailed spatial analysis up to a radius of 5 meters every time they get out of the bloody car. Several years ago, we were passing through a town in Switzerland called Sion, catching up with a family friend of my wife's. "Is the car okay there?" I'd ask her about our rental. "Yeah, it's fine," she waved. When we returned, there was a fine. I resisted the urge to demand payment from her. Of course, I ignored it, being a foreign country and all. 3 years later, I received a 40-euro fine in the mail all the way from Sion. 3 years. I don't know much about the Swiss, but it seems that promptness is not their thing. Persistence sure is, but not promptness. It was written in Swiss French, so of course I threw it straight in the bin. Surely they had no ability to enforce the fine in another country, I thought. A year later, I received an upgraded fine for ignoring the first, now the equivalent of 270 Australian dollars. Again, I couldn't understand the demands, but it was clear from all the bold red ink that this was being taken quite seriously over in the municipal offices of Sion. Slowly, but seriously. I thought I had better jump online and do some research before I ignored it any further. It was clear that the Swiss had no right to take the matter any further than postal demands, unless, that is, I ever decided to visit the country again. The web was littered with examples of people getting pulled up by Swiss customs years after a parking transgression, and having their passports confiscated until they paid the now very costly fines. I thought about my future, the one in which I'm a multi-millionaire author who takes my family skiing in the Swiss Alps each year. Well, damn, I had better pay it then. The lesson here is to not rely on anyone but yourself when it comes to avoiding fines. Just like I shouldn't have listened to my wife's friend in Sion, that French guy last night sure as shit shouldn't have listened to me. But, Mr. Frenchie, if you're out there, I apologize for not having had a business analyst handy to help crunch the parking sign numbers. I've lived in Melbourne pretty much my whole life, so if I can't work it out, what bloody hope do you have? You probably would have got one anyway. And last but not least, straight hedge. One of those times when you have to really try not to look like a Romanian UFC fan. I've always hated my hair. It's dead straight, like Asian hair, except a bit blonde. Not a wave in sight. Before I started shaving my head, I'd often catch hairdressers with bewildered expressions when I glanced at them in the salon mirror. Their years of training completely useless when faced with my uncooperative follicles. "It's so straight," they would remark nervously, realizing that their fancy comb-jiggling and blow-drying techniques were futile. The women would often add, "I would love to have hair like this," as if I should be a cherished prize for a guy to have the kind of hair coveted by female hairdressers. The way I dealt with it was Murray's pomade, an orange tin of thick muck that had a weird picture of black people with perfect afros and bright white faces. That shit was like cement. My hair was a dangerous weapon. I had a coif like rhino horn. I could flick people out of the way if the footpath was too busy when I was running late for work, like the running of the bulls. And getting it out was difficult. I could wash my hair 10 times and it would never really leave. The effects would just be slightly dulled. I have no idea where I inherited the problem from. My dad has hair like steel wool. Literally, you can clean roasting dishes with his head. And my mom's is kind of normal. My brother has thick, compliant hair, and my sister's is crazy frizzy like Janet Jackson's in the 80s. So I'm the thin, straight-haired freak in the family. Plus, I have a serious lack of facial hair, which again stands in stark contrast to my old man and brother. If it wasn't for the hint of blonde, it would be fair to start asking my mother questions about potential dalliances with Asian men. About 8 years ago, I had had enough of the applying, shaping, washing, and drying every day, so I finally found the guts to shave my head. Shaving your head is a bit of lottery, in that you really don't know the shape that's been hiding beneath all the hair. Is it a perfect Bruce Willis dome, or do you have the misproportioned landscape of Britney Spears? I think my shape was okay, but I had a huge blotch of age spots on the right side of my head that had previously been invisible. But I didn't care. It was still a new lease on life. I'd get out of the shower and just flick my head like a dog and get on with my day. When I woke up in the morning, the pillow was no longer stuck to my head, and free to breathe for the first time in years, my hair started growing quicker. My wife has only known me with a shaved head, and she dislikes it. She thinks I look like a white supremacist. Since she's Asian, that's probably a bit disconcerting. She's been hassling me to grow my hair out, and I finally relented. The next haircut will be the good old short back and sides, blending into the pile of straight shit at the top. I'll need to start styling my hair again to avoid looking like I've just escaped the electric chair. And I'm not looking forward to it. My style options are pretty much limited to a spike. I guess I could get a flat top, but I don't want to look like a Romanian UFC fan. Although a spike is not completely bereft of shame, a 42-year-old with a spike is like a 42-year-old wearing hip-hop gear. In other words, I'm certain that I'll look ridiculous. So my plan is to simply highlight how ridiculous I look before immediately shaving my head again. Then I can slide back into my comfort zone, looking like a strangely liberal white supremacist with Asian hair and an Asian wife. Thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed this story, please let me know. I'm always looking for fun stories to narrate, so if you have a story that fits the "Does This Happen to You?" theme, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me on Twitter @ChrisKKArya, on LinkedIn, and on Facebook.